Excuse me, Director Perescu, I was helping Alan. I don't know why him and Donna are having problems getting into the meeting. But with that said, can you please advise who moved and second the approval of the agenda?
The approval of the agenda was Carol and seconded by Karen.
Thank you.
Hearing no comment, no public comments at this time, we'll move on to old business. Who's going to speak on funding request?
Excuse me, Yvette. May I ask everyone to mute themselves unless they're speaking, because there is a background noise that makes it almost impossible to hear.
I know, I can, it's like bubble noises.
Is it Donna?
It is typically Donna as a chief program officer.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, now I can finally hear you. The bubble stopped. Okay, so these are the funding requests. There's not too many updates as you'll see on the notes on the first page that we closed because the fiscal year ended. We are doing some new grant making guidelines with revising some of the questions and adding some new things. So, and we're adding things that are going to be relevant, or we want the grantees to respond to the five new strategic focus areas that were approved by the board: healthcare infrastructure and services, behavior health, mental health, homelessness, vital human services to people with chronic conditions, and economic protection, recovery, and food security. So we will be opening up, we're just concluding and finishing up tweaking the last of the grant guidelines. And later on in the agenda, Will is going to give a little demonstration on our new web page for the grantees. It's got a little bit cleaner and easier to read. And so what I tried to do on each one of them, I gave a July update on any of those that were applicable. There's not too many. And then, what else did I do? So that was really about it. So if anybody has any questions.
Does anyone have questions for Donna?
Yay.
Hearing no questions, we'll move on to new business.
Sorry, I had a question. This is Carol.
Oh, sorry, Carol.
I didn't hit my unmute button fast enough. I had a question about the Alianza request. It says that they have an audit started. Has that been completed?
No, it's just starting. They just signed the engagement letter. It's going to take a while, Carol, because this is their first audit. There's a lot of documents that the auditors are requesting from Sylvia. So she's working with them on getting the documents that they need. So Chris is on the phone. I don't know how long a first time audit usually takes. Maybe he can answer that question. I'm not familiar how the length of time on an audit. I guess it just depends on what they're looking for. So is Chris on the phone? Chris on?
He told me he was having problems getting in. He was going to dial in, but I don't think he's in. Let me talk.
Okay. I can find out that information for you, Carol, and email it to you if you'd like.
Okay. Am I on the right page? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
If anyone else have any more questions or any questions?
Chris is on the line now if you want to ask him.
Chris? This is Donna. Carol Rogers had a question about the Alianza audit and what the normal time frame is to complete one, and I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming it depends on a lot of different variables.
Yes.
Hello there. I'm on now.
Who is
it? It does depend on variables. You know, right now we're waiting for Alianza to provide their information that was requested as of June 30th. So, you know, that does take a little bit of time, depending on how quickly it is to complete their calendar, their fiscal year-end work. So my guess is probably not going to be completed until, you know, probably mid-August is my guess, because we got to get the information to the auditor, and then they have, you know, they got to fit it into their schedule as well. So,
Carol, do you have any questions for Chris?
No, thank you. That answered my question.
Does anybody else have questions?
No.
No. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to new business. Consideration to approve $500,000 from fiscal year 2021. Grant budget to further advance the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. Strategic focus area, health infrastructure and services. There's a part A and a part B. Conrado, will you be explaining that, Grant?
Sure. This is an item that was going to be presented at the board meeting, and it was requested by some board members to bring it to the program committee first. And here it is, the item. It is in response to the challenges that exist persistently in the Black communities in Coachella Valley. One of the communities in which the district has already invested and believe that there is work that needs to be completed is the Desert Highland Gateway, where the intent is to approve $400,000 to seek competitive biddings by local nonprofit organizations that can deliver healthcare to that community. The second ask of that is to create a scholarship fund with $100,000 to support Black students pursuing health careers.
Anybody have any questions on this grant?
This is Alan. Can you hear me okay?
Well, it's up to Carol. Do you want to go first, Carol, or do you want Ellen to go?
No, you can. Ellen can go, and then you can call on others. Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted some more. I wanted some more information on the 400,000 bit, and there was nothing really on the report. You were saying leveraging some contracting with other providers, and I just wanted to know more about how that money would be spent.
So the request is to place the money into the Desert Healthcare Foundation and to have either a request for proposals or an invitation for local nonprofit clinics to participate and say how they will deliver healthcare to the Black community in Desert Highland Gateway.
Okay, that just wasn't real clear to me from the little sentence that was here, but it's clear to me now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Carol?
I had a couple of questions. One of them is that I noticed looking at the map that there are other Black communities in Coachella Valley with a high number of residents. And I was wondering if there is any going to be any accommodation to allow those communities to participate. You know, I noticed Indio had a high number and Desert Hot Springs as well.
Yes, and Andrea, can you place the map on the screen, please? What we want to showcase here is a couple of things. On the Desert Hot Springs, first, there are two communities with the highest concentration of Blacks in Coachella Valley. One is Desert Hot Springs and the other is Desert Highland Gateway in Palm Springs. There are other areas where there are concentrations of Black members of our community. However, these are the two areas with the highest concentration. And the map shows that. When we did this, we laid over the locations of health clinics that are available to the community. When you look at the Desert Hot Springs, you will see that there are three health clinics there. And there are actually two that are specifically within the Black community. When we look at Desert Highland Gateway, we see that the closest is Desert AIDS Project, which poses some challenges for the community given the stigma associated with the name of HIV and what traditionally have been the population that Desert AIDS Project has been serving. So in addition to that, one of the things that the staff assessed with Desert Highland Gateway is that the district has been already working with the community. They completed a community needs assessment. They have highlighted, elevated that this is a response that they need, that they want. And that, in fact, it is a desert of services, what exists in Desert Highland Gateway. It's not to say that other communities are less important. I believe it's an issue of readiness. And we hope that this intervention can become a template through which the district can be responsive to place-based needs that we anticipate we will be uncovering using the community health needs assessment that the district is conducting as we speak.
Okay, and the scholarship fund, will that be available to the entire Coachella Valley to Black students?
Yes, and the intent with that fund is to work with organizations such as One Future Coachella Valley that already have a presence in many high schools. We also want to raise awareness through other Black serving organizations such as the Negro Educational Fund. The challenge that we have with some of those smaller organizations such as the Negro Educational Fund is that they do not have one, the infrastructure that an organization like One Future Coachella Valley has, and that they don't have the financial capacity to absorb this type of investment that the district is willing or is considering to make. One of the policies we have in place is that organizations that do not have audited financial statements are not eligible to receive this large funding. They can only receive small grants or mini grants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I see Maribel Nunez put into the chat box. She commented, "Hello, this is Maribel Nunez from Inland Equity Partnership, formerly California Partnership.
And she said that they support for DCHD investments, organizations that are led by African Americans and racial equity. Maribel, are you on the line?
Hello?
Hello, is this Maribel?
Hello?
Hello?
Hear you, Maribel. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, this is Maribel Nunez.
But we can't hear you with your radio in the back.
Sorry, I just have another meeting. Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, just doing public comments. Just wanted to give a statement that we support the Desert Healthcare District's investments for African-American communities. I think that there's still a big disparity when we see investments within nonprofits. And we strongly believe that people that are impacted should be helping with the strategy and helping with issues of services for our communities. And so I see a big disparity in regards to investments for nonprofits that are led within people of color, particularly African Americans. So yeah, we support the efforts of Desert Healthcare District to put investments. And I think that there were some recommendations of nonprofits that are based in Palm Springs or other parts, and they're led by African Americans. A good resource, a good person in the area, Dieter Crawford, Edward Ramoran, and others, I think could be a good resource if folks wanna know some of the grassroots efforts. But I really appreciate your support in looking into supporting these communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anyone else have comments?
Yeah, I have a bunch of questions and thoughts and comments on this one. So the first request I'm going to make, I know that in our agenda from our June meeting, Conrado, you gave us a little bit of a synopsis of the Desert Hot Springs Health and Wellness Foundation, and it was like very slight. I would like to formally request that we get some information from them regarding a couple of different things as far as Black patients are concerned. So one, patient satisfaction. Two, the kinds of services they are providing for the African-American community in Desert Hot Springs. And three, if they at all or ever cater or have catered in the past to Desert Highland Gateway Estates, or really like any other part. According to this map, they're like in very close proximity as well to Desert Highland Gateway Estates. Obviously not as close as Desert AIDS Project. So I just would like to know like what is their actual facts and figures, numbers, money, investment into the African American community of Desert Health, or sorry, DHS. With that in mind, go ahead.
Yes, I want to highlight a couple of things. One, we asked this question to community leaders in Desert Highland Gateway. The answer to why they don't use the services at Desert AIDS Project is they mentioned stigma. And the chairman of this committee, Yvette, was part of that meeting. So we asked that question, and that was the answer that we received. They prefer to go to other places because of the stigma associated with HIV/AIDS. So that is one. We believe, and to the second part of this question is, once we have a competitive process, we will be asking these questions to whichever is going to try to participate and partner, number one, with the district because of the funding, and number two, with the Desert Highland Gateway community, because they will be the one that will either embrace or reject any partnership with a local healthcare organization that will provide services or that will propose to provide services there. So we can ask those questions about patient satisfaction, what efforts, if any, exist to serving that community.
I'm asking very specifically for the Desert Hot Springs Health and Wellness Center that we funded like very heavily and have supported very heavily for the last, since 2011, according to your notes, or 2012. I want to know what their patient satisfaction is and what their actual like resources and investments are to the Black community in Desert Hot Springs. If I'm looking at your map, we have two heavily Black communities that you mentioned, Desert Hot Springs and Palm Springs. If we keep going down south a little more, right, like Indio is right behind them, so not even talking about them yet. I'm just genuinely very curious, like, what has that center in Desert Hot Springs done for the Black community's health? Can they share some numbers with us? Can they share patient satisfaction surveys that FQHCs have to do every year with their patients? Just some like very basic demographics from them. To see if they also need support from us in the future, or if the support level that we've given them is like enough. I think 400,000 is a very good start. I know that there's a lot of other smaller nonprofits whose audits may not even equate to being able to tap into these first funds that we're going to deliver. But their patients, like their, we call them patients, their clients or the people they serve, like have to be getting healthcare from somewhere. So is it satisfactory healthcare? That's my first question.
Karen, if I may, the Desert Hot Springs Health and Wellness Center, which you're right, the district did invest $5 million in, is not a full-fledged FQHC. It has four dental operatory chairs and it has a teen clinic. However, up the street and around the corner is the full-fledged clinic that Borrego operates. So the Desert Health and Wellness Center, it was split between the Boys and Girls Club and then this dental operatory, which is still working, utilizing. But we could ask them as well, you know, of course, how many patients are going for dental services. But it's also the teen clinic. So the full-fledged FQHC clinic is up the street and around the corner.
Thank you. That's a very important clarification because I thought it was all one in the same and we had funded this one giant project at a $5 million level to open up an FQHC, and it was serving the community, like our funds were directly, yeah. Got it. Okay. So to that point, my next question would be, there are plenty of Black-led and Black-serving nonprofits in the Coachella Valley. Some that I know of are the Desert Hot Springs Education Committee, the Mobile Natural Healing Industry Nonprofit, House of Hope Nonprofit in Desert Hot Springs, Advancing Desert Hot Springs Nonprofit, Building Resilience in African American Family. They're located in Palm Desert, but they serve the whole Coachella Valley. Sigma Beta Psi, which serves Desert Hot Springs and Palm Springs. Some of these nonprofits may not have, similar to Alianza, the actual like audit necessary to receive funds from us. Is there, or to receive or participate in these $400,000, is there something that we can think of creatively to support some of these smaller nonprofits to go beyond just like a mini grant?
Well, there's an opportunity to utilize maybe Regional Access Project Foundation as a fiscal sponsor for these small nonprofits, which they have done and still do.
And Vice President Borja, if you notice from the chat, Maribel has also called out different organizations, some of those that you've mentioned as well.
Oh, yeah. We talk to the same people. And then my last sort of question on this topic. The $100,000, we heard from Elizabeth Romero, who sits at the Riverside County Office of Education, at our last meeting, our last big district meeting, and we also heard from Grace Gardner, City Councilwoman of Palm Springs. They were both like very forthcoming to support this initiative that we had going on. I'm wondering if there's a possibility that either the City of Palm Springs or the Riverside County Office of Education can match the $100,000 scholarship fund that we're gonna be putting out or putting into somewhere else. I'm wondering if that's a possible conversation, and it may or may not be appropriate. I'm just asking because they were both very forthcoming and kind at our last meeting about supporting this particular initiative, and saying that they'd maybe come in and participate with us in the future. We're in the future, so I'm wondering if we could reach out and ask if they'd be willing to match any of this funding, more specifically the scholarship funding.
We did have a Zoom meeting with Chair Perez Gill and Conrado and Dieter and Grace Gardner. And Grace is very, very enthusiastic at trying to see if she can get any kind of City of Palm Springs funding for anything.
All right, so it's maybe
scholarships as well. Yeah. But she's going to see what she can try and do as well. That's her zone that she represents.
All right,
I didn't know if you wanted to add anything to that from the meeting we had, Grace, Dieter.
She expressed a couple of projects that she was thinking or working on. Dieter expressed that maybe we should partner up with Negro Foundation because they give grants out already to the Black community. So it might help them, but I don't know if we can work with them on that, Conrado.
Yes, Yvette, we can work on that. And in fact, it's one of the things that we propose, that we also elevate the visibility of this through the Negro Educational Fund.
Thank you. That was my question. And then my last question if these $400 funds are released, are nonprofits still going to come to the program committee and request these funds? How are they going to be relinquished out?
This will be brought to the program committee.
Okay. Thank you, that's it. Those are all my questions.
I have a question regarding the fund. I'm wondering if we're gonna try to give opportunity to the nonprofits that have already worked with this community and help them try to apply for the grant, only because I think they would have better knowledge of what that community is going through and what that community needs. Is there a way that we can work on this with those nonprofits? With those nonprofits? Because I feel like people from the same community or that know the same community work better in partnership with the community. Or are we gonna try to go through this that route? Donna or Donna?
We are expecting that part of the evaluation will be based heavily on the ability of organizations that will be proposing to work in that community to have partnerships and to have deep knowledge about the needs and challenges that Black folks are experiencing in our communities. So the answer to your question, Yvette, is yes.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any more questions for, regarding this grant?
One more. We can say that funds would be available to Black-led organizations, or is it just anyone who happens to work in any of these geographic areas? I know at least in like, sorry, let me zoom into my map real quick. In like the Eastern Coachella Valley part, there are certain nonprofits that work in these communities geographically, but they don't necessarily serve or are led by the Black community. Can we be more specific about that? Yes, right?
So I believe that we will be asking for no proposals if we do something like that. Unfortunately, when we look at the nonprofit world of Coachella Valley, we have three or four clinics that have the capacity to deliver healthcare, and none of them is led by an African American. So we look at SAC Health Systems is led by a Caucasian male. We look at Clínicas de Salud del Pueblo is led by a Caucasian female. We look at VESER. AIDS Project is led by a Caucasian male. We look at Borrego Health System is led by a Caucasian female. That's who we have.
All right. Fair, just asking. Thank you for that information.
Yeah, I have a few questions.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure of the timing on this and how long it's going to take to roll out. I'm also not sure about the focus. Are we talking about healthcare that is generalized, or are we talking about healthcare that we've been learning about in the COVID-19, about this population being particularly vulnerable? And I'm wondering beyond that, whether there's a possibility of convening a meeting of all the organizations that deal with this population to get feedback from them on focus. So those are a couple of different questions.
Vena, do you want to make a comment to address those?
Sure. If you do notice, what we did have the allocation is going to, you know, include but not limited to primary care, behavioral health, and navigation services. One of the things that we had also proposed simultaneously to happen while this is while we're working on this is to update the community health needs assessment that was conducted by Loma Linda University Institute for Community Partnerships with the community health workers that were recruited from that community, from Desert Highland Gateway. The needs assessment is 6 years old. Dieter Crawford did mention that a lot of the things that were found to be needs have been either addressed or have been alleviated or have been reduced. Say, for example, like in the original assessments of a lot of uninsured. Well, now with the Affordable Care Act, he says insurance really isn't that much of a problem anymore for uninsured, for those that are insured. Another one was transportation was a barrier. Now he mentioned with Uber and Lyft that transportation doesn't really seem to be that much of a barrier anymore, but the diabetes is still rampant, obesity is still rampant, the substance abuse of the youth and the recently incarcerated that are coming out of prison, those are still big needs in that community. But in order for the community health workers to do another assessment, we'll also be able to then see what the what a main focus or focuses, or is it foci, can be led towards. Does that answer your question, Nicholas?
Partially, yeah, I think so. But I'm just wondering about the timing of this. Is this a 400,000 as a kind of pilot in this that will take time to roll out and be effective? Or is it meant to be more immediate to get services going specifically?
It's short term. Some of these are short term as we look for long-term solutions down the line. An updated community needs assessment, health needs assessment will help us with long-term solutions. But this can be short term right now, and it is geared towards one of our focus areas, our strategic focus area. So, and we do have a long time investment in that community. So it's just building upon that investment and building upon that relationship that we have had developed with.
And is there a COVID-19 aspect to this?
There could be. Most likely, yes, there will be a COVID-19 aspect.
Okay, thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Yes, this is Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
I was wondering if it would be possible to get a copy of that six-year-old needs assessment report so that we could see what was in it. I do remember that one of the asks was for a job training for the community members. So I would like to see the report if that's possible.
Definitely. I'll send it out to all the community members. We also had Loma Linda also conducted two other side ones, not on our dime, that involved the youth. So I can
post
those as well.
Thank you. I think that would be very informative.
Okay. Does anyone else have any more questions? Hearing no more questions, do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
I second.
Okay, so it was Nicholas, right?
Right.
Approved, and Carol second. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Motion passed to the board for approval. New business. Also, we have number two, long-term comprehensive strategies. It's informational and collaborative efforts. Does anyone have any questions on this part? Really?
Can someone in staff just review what you're letting us know?
Dana, would you please provide a summary of the long-term comprehensive strategies?
Well, it's a good question, since that's one of the things we are going to be bringing to Strategic Planning Committee at 4:30 to get some of their ideas, but one long-term and utilizing collective efforts is getting other funders on board, other service providers on board, like IHP, who has a huge presence here in the Coachella Valley, and they are very interested in this Desert Highland Gateway community. When we were talking about the short term before, when I was addressing Nicholas's questions about this, you know, having service providers bringing RFPs, answering RFPs, and how they would be bringing healthcare services and access to healthcare services, whether it be tagging along with Fine Food Bank when they're delivering fresh food, it's mobile clinics or it's pop-up clinics. We utilize some of the churches where maybe some clinics, pop-up clinics could be held. But long-term, once again, I think we really do need to look at an updated community health needs assessment. There's a whole new community. Has the community changed that much? Is the attribution there? Is it still generational like it has been for years? You've got new advocates on board. Dieter was a lot younger before he got involved in with Desert Highland Gateway. He's now a huge advocate, very well respected in the Coachella Valley. He's a great leader, and I think with his efforts and with Grace Gardner as well helping, and the other partners that we're looking at, long-term partners that we can address from that needs assessment as well, what would be some of the long-term strategies. And one possible long-term strategy would be actually a bricks and mortar clinic there. Another one through the city is looking at, because they are designated as a food desert, their city is trying to get some type of grocery store in that area as well.
So if I may add something to that, I think the long-term solution to addressing the healthcare need of communities of color is going to be resource intensive, and the district probably doesn't have all those resources, so it will require a collective contribution of cities, organizations, funders, and including the Desert Healthcare District in a leadership or catalyst role to invite others to participate in bringing these solutions forward. Addressing the healthcare needs in Desert Highland Gateway is as a long-term comprehensive strategy will require the intervention of the city of Palm Springs. It will require the participation of employers and business, the business community that benefits from having a presence in that community, and that we believe is not participating fully in the life and well-being of the residents of that community. We believe that this might be a template on how we address this, and we have started a conversation, for example, with IEHP. IEHP and the district, we had an exchange of ideas, of data. We recently received the map and had a conversation with the CEO of IEHP, who's interested in supporting the efforts and partnering with the Desert Healthcare District to bring to the desert a couple of the IEHP community resource centers where health education classes take place, where there is enrollment opportunities, where there is navigation opportunities. And we're looking at two areas where this could materialize. One is in Palm Springs, and the other is in Indio. So we understand that it will require time, it will require some lateral thinking on how we address this and how we invite and make sure that others that can contribute to the health and well-being of our communities are participating and are contributing financially and in other ways. For example, when we had a conversation about Desert Highland Gateway, we know that the community needs more than just a clinic. We know that the community needs access to nutritious food, that they need access to a safe community where they can play, where they can do exercise. And we know that this is a reality for many other communities. And that is something that the district cannot put a supermarket or offer any incentive for a supermarket to open its doors in Desert Highland Gateway. However, the city of Palm Springs can. And by engaging members of the city council, members of the administration in the city of Palm Springs, by inviting the business community to participate and contribute with the leadership of the district, we believe that that will become a long-term solution to the challenges that the community is facing. And one thing that we want to make sure is that this is an effort that is led by community members and that we're listening to them and that they are the ones that are bringing forward their ideas, their needs, their proposed solutions, and anything that the community does is in response to what they need and what they deserve.
Just as an FYI for people's information, there is a group of people organizing a Black worker center in the Inland Empire to address some of the concerns and issues that you've brought up and that the Black community has brought up across Riverside County and San Bernardino County for generations now. The Black worker center, one of their big asks is to make sure that people have jobs that are providing them with health insurance, that are providing them with a not just minimum wage, but a living wage, that have worker protections. I don't think they're thinking about the Coachella Valley as like the place to put the worker center in. However, now in this like post-COVID or COVID digital age, it'd be very interesting to see what their take would be on some of the same injustices, like injustices that people have been talking about in the Coachella Valley for many years that are related to work and health and just equity in general. Just as an FYI.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Good information.
Any more questions regarding this topic? We'll move forward to item number 3, grant-making process, redesigning the web page for a grant-making process.
This item, the intent of this is to make our grant-making process, our website, more user-friendly, to streamline the process through which grant seeker organizations receive and apply for funds at our website. So we have done a redesign of our website and to make that process a clearer effort for the organization. So we have a new it's not completely new, it's basically the same letter of interest form, but the process is better guided and it provides more transparency and information to organizations that are seeking funds from the district. And our intention with this is to make this process easier, less cumbersome for the community, and to make our board members absolutely look great in the effort that we're making to make our funds available to the community. So we invited Will, who is in charge of our website, to showcase how this is going to work. Is Will ready to do this?
I am here, and Conrado, you said that very well. That pretty much captures our objective in taking this on. So I'm going to try to share the screen. Hello, committee members, by the way. I actually, Andrea, can you
share the screen? So let me stop. Is that what you said, Will?
Yes, yeah, please.
It's on you. Oh, okay. Wait, let me make you the host. Hold on. Or a cover. Now, do you have the option to share the screen?
I do. Thank you, Andrea. Can you guys see it? Okay, so when you go to our website in the future, we're still working on this, and you go to the menu, the top item under grants will be the grants program. This will be the main page. And what we decided to do is we really wanted to lay it out in steps to make it really easy to do. First here on your right, you see Desert Healthcare District Grants Program, basic introduction. Under that, you're going to see all the information that our grantees and grant applicants should know, such as the grants policy, prevailing wage, law. The great thing about this is that after you go through these, you read one, you go to the next, it closes the one before. So you don't have a lot of text on the screen. It really makes it easier to navigate. Read down through all of the important information that's currently on our site. And our current site is very gray, by the way, just mostly text. And we want it to be more visually appealing with this. On the left, you will see the grant funding strategic areas that were identified by our grants team. Each one has an icon. All the icons will be different. You can click on the icon or you can click on learn more. And what either will do, it will open a window where all the information about that strategic area is. And you'll notice that it fades all the information in the background so that your focus is on that particular area. Basically, just close that out and you move down, and most of the pages you're going to find a how to apply button. This will also be in the menu as its own item, how to apply. You click on that and that's where you see the steps. There are 7 steps for the grants application. Starting with creating an online account. Now, if you're a past grantee and you already have an account, you simply would skip to step 2, the letter of interest. The budget template and other things are going to be linked. We don't have all the links in yet. That's underway. And at the bottom of the steps, you'll see the grant forms. So this process, if I go back to grant application, the process is very similar for the mini grant application, just fewer steps. There are fewer requirements for that. Donna, is there anything you want to say about the steps or?
No, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
May I ask, is this live now? Is this live on our website?
It is not live now. As I mentioned before, we're still working on it. We have some items to link. We need to change icons. There's art, you know, we need to add, but we're very close. The objective, and I've already, this has been posted on our website, that we want to have this up by August 1. Are there any questions about the new pages?
I like it. Very well done.
Thank you, Carol.
Yeah, it's definitely much more like user-friendly to navigate. I was just on ours. I do have a question. When people or when nonprofits are applying, can we have a feature similar to Google Docs where, like, if I'm in there and Donna's in there, we're both using the same login ID, we can make edits to the application as we go together? I don't know if that's a feature possible. I know it's possible on Google Docs. It may not be possible on this like interface. Just wondering.
I could definitely speak with our GraphTech team, you know, the same team that designed our website. They put this together with us. I'll definitely ask them that. Is that something that would be beneficial, Donna?
I'm not really understanding what the question was. Want to edit? You want the grantees to be able to edit something?
So when I'm applying for a grant to the healthcare district, I want my boss to be able to also come into the same application and make any edits they may see that are needed. And not just my boss, like if it's my employee who's also going to be working on the grant and I type in something wrong, let's say I say we're going to serve 700 people, but the conversation had been 500 people, can other people from my same organization come in and make those edits while I work through the application?
No, because through our grant making system that we have, BlackBow, you have one user that signs in. And I mean, you could share the user and then they could sign in as you and look at the application, because you can save it and not submit it yet. I believe there's also the capability of that you can download a Word document and play with that as well, and then cut and paste and put it into the actual portal.
Being able to download a Word document.
Alejandro made a comment, and I don't know what, I think, are you on the phone? Are you on the thing, Alejandro?
Yes, I am. I'm on.
Okay.
Yeah, and you pretty much, you know, provided the answer, Donna. It does not have the capability to do have like a working document, Vice President Boja, but what it does allow us to do is to actually have, you know, multiple, individuals work on the application using the same login information for the organization. So the work, you know, it's a living document. You could have multiple people log in and work on the same document. But since the Blackbaud system does not allow for the capability like a Google Docs, you would have to sign in, and the other staff member would have to sign in and work on the document. It does have a feature, what is called check in and check out when you're working on certain documents. When you check out a document, it does not allow for somebody else to work on it until you check it back in, because that's how the system tracks changes that are being made to the application.
Can the grantees check in and check out? I thought it was just us, the staff, because the documents have to be submitted and uploaded.
They could on the application, end, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Being able to download it even as a Word document, that's okay too, right? People can just upload it to a Google Doc, work on it together, and then copy and paste answers over to just one more step, but that's fine. Just the availability to be able to work with your counterparts, just because we know that grants aren't ever just written by one person, right? Like, it really does take a group of people to put some of these like massive multi-$1,000 requests in. So that was it.
Yeah, I think it just makes it easier on our end to not use things like that, because we extract information from the application directly from our Blackbaud system to do the reports that you and the rest of the board see, and the program committee also sees. So that's why we use that system, because we're able to extract information and then put it on Word documents to present to the program committee and also to the full board for approval and or questions.
Thank you. That makes sense.
Thank you. Any other questions? I think that's it.
Yes.
So,
thank you. Thank you very much, Will, for your work and everybody in the office. And that's great.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you, Will. One of the questions we wanted to incorporate into our letter of interest and to address the question of supporting organizations that are led by people of color, Director Borja, we wanted to ask organizations to provide demographic data about their leadership, who is the CEO, who's the CFO, people that are in leadership positions within organizations, and also to ask them about the demographics of their boards of directors. We believe that is an important step to elevate the importance of considering diversity, equity, and inclusion in the nonprofit organizations that are serving our valley. There are many private foundations that do ask those questions. However, when we consulted with our legal counsel, we were told that Proposition 209 of 1966 amended the California Constitution. It was an anti-affirmative action legislation signed by Pete Wilson, the governor, and it prohibits public agencies from considering race, sex, or ethnicities in areas of public employment, public contracting, and public education. So we cannot incorporate those questions into our process. We may be able to incorporate those questions in the near future, as recently, ACA 5 qualified for the November 3rd ballot, and it would effectively repeal the Proposition 209. So it will change the California Constitution to embrace affirmative action and would allow public agencies to ask those questions. So more to come.
Do we ask graphic information regarding people that are being served?
Yes, we do. I believe so. Do we, Donna?
What's that?
Do we ask demographics of who they serve?
Yes.
Is that something that's shared with us when we see the applications here?
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the application. Yeah, we share the application with the program committee. So they ask who they're serving, the number of residents, and then they have a choice of who they can choose. And there's a pretty distinctive list.
You're right. We do ask age, race, gender. You're right.
All right. Thank you. We don't ask about their board or executive staff, though.
Just who they serve.
I'll move on to committee member comments. Do any of the committee members have comments at this time?
This is Carol, I do.
Okay, Ms. Carol.
I had some questions back on the unexpended grant funding report that we received. And I have about six questions. In the interest of time, is it okay if I just put them in writing and then staff can answer it and share it with committee? I just wanted to know things like, for instance, a matter of balance, that was a two-year grant, and is that on hold because of COVID? Neurovitality Center was a six-month grant. Questions like that, if I can just put them in writing rather than go over it now to take up people's time.
I think it would be fine, right, Conrado?
I suggest that we answer those questions. I believe those questions have been brought up before.
In the past, yeah, I just wanted an update.
Yes.
Great. So, Donna, I'll just put them in writing to Conrado and Donna and.
No,
and,
no, no. I
Carol, you should do them now. Answer.
Yes, we can ask those questions and we can answer them right now. It won't take much time.
All right. We'll start with Mizell. That was a two-year grant from 2017. There's $38,000 remaining in the grant. Is that retention or is it program services that have yet to be delivered?
This one is a closed grant. What happens, and Chris can explain maybe a little bit more, if you're looking at the grant payment schedule, this is as of June 30th, 2020. So when you get the next grant payment schedule that begins fiscal year 2021, those balances and ones that will drop off because a lot of these are closed and have been paid out retentions. As you can see, if you look at Mizell, if you go all the way over, you see the 37,000, but then you see right below that 37,000 in parentheses, that means that that's been paid. So it really is a zero balance.
I see, but now I understand. And so the same thing is for Fine Food Bank.
Yes, actually they returned some money. They had unexpended funds and they returned some money. So that grant is closed now as well.
Okay, and what about Neurovitality Center? It says it's a 6-month program starting in November 2019.
Yes, we're going back and forth with Bev Greer on that. She is sending in her final report. If you recall, this was a collaborative funding project with Regional Access Project Foundation. the district was approved that they would pay for the hire of all the new employees that were necessary for NeuroVitality to get their CBAS and adult daycare center licensed and certified. They hired all those people. They were in the process of trying to recruit people from IEHP. They had a whole list of people from IEHP clients. And then, and then guess what happened? COVID. So they had to close the doors. They were able to save. Serve some people, but right now, so she's writing, more than likely some of the funds will not be expended.
Okay. Thank you. Lift to Rise, is that, it says 100,000 unexpended, but wasn't that part of a larger grant?
Are you down at the bottom there? 100,000? Yeah. And then we did a grant extension of 500,000. So they've been expending. We haven't gotten any reports yet with receipts, but so that, okay. Yeah.
And then there was one, it said an asterisk somewhere that said, oh, that's under the foundation. So I'll ask that question when we get there.
Okay.
Thank you. You've answered my questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you guys for taking up your time.
Does anybody else have any member comments? Or? No. Seeing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 1:12 p.m. And we will move on to the Foundation Program Committee meeting. So at 1:12 also, but at 1:12 we'll call to order the Program Committee meeting, Foundation. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Make a motion to approve. This is Carol.
I second. This is Karen.
Okay. Approved and second. I mean, Carol approved and Karen second. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
I make a motion.
This is Alan. Second.
Okay, so Carol made the motion to approve and Alan seconded. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Are there any comments from the audience at this time?
No hands are raised.
Hearing none, we'll move on to new business and seeing that there's.
I'm sorry, this is Carol. Can I interrupt a minute? I had a correction for the minutes for the foundation. On page 4, I asked about using district funds to support cooling centers and Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs, not Palm Springs. Palm Springs already had a cooling center, so could we change that as well?
I believe we can.
Noted. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. So I move that we approve the minutes as corrected.
Okay.
Second.
So the meeting minutes have been changed and have been approved by Carol and second by Ellen?
Yes.
Okay. So we move on to new business. Is there any new, well, I don't see any new businesses at this moment. Is there anything we should know, Conrado? New business?
No, we have no new business on this, on the foundation side.
Okay. So seeing that there's no new business, we'll move on to old business. Number one is homeless initiative, the summer cooling centers update. Who will be giving us an update on the summer cooling centers?
Donna?
I believe Greg is on as well, but I did include his email with the good news that he was able to secure funding for the Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs cooling centers. And Greg, if you are still on the phone and still here and want to add anything, let me see, are you still here? Yeah, he's still there, unmuted.
I am here. Yeah, it's funny because last year we had the money, but didn't have the locations. So this year we got the money. But we are actually moving forward with the Elks Lodge in Cathedral City, and we've been going through some legal work with them. But CVRM is ordering all the necessary equipment, so showers, portable restrooms, and we're hoping to have that open by Friday. We are still trying to nail down a place in Desert Hot Springs. We've reached out to the council, reached out to a couple churches. So we are in talks with one of the church, but if Carol, you know of another church, we can't use last year's because it's not big enough due to the requirements for social distancing and stuff. So we are moving forward. I'm happy to answer that question.
I have you spoken to the people at St. Elizabeth's?
I don't know. I'll ask to see them if they have. So. Do you know a good contact there, Carol?
I'll send you an email.
Okay, perfect.
You know, Greg, I'm not going back to the Desert Hot Springs Health and Wellness Center, which I'm sure is closed because of they've got a huge gymnasium though.
That's true.
That maybe can you talk to Samantha Pryor?
Yeah.
Are we having an earthquake? Is it a truck that just went by?
Yeah, that's it. And that gym is on you.
They've got a kitchen. They've got showers.
Yeah.
Gym that's there.
Yeah. That's a great. That's run by the city, isn't it?
Borrego is running it now.
Oh, Borrego
it's,
does.
It's owned by the city, I believe, but Borrego is running it. Just drop that we paid $5 million for that.
Okay. Good drop.
They owe us.
Yeah. Well, and I can reach directly out to Borrego too. So.
Mm-hmm. But Samantha, I think she's in charge of the wellness center.
And then I didn't update on the Palm Springs one. I think all of you know we had to move from the high school, even though we don't know if school's opening or not. But we did relocate that to the United Methodist Church there on Alejo. And they've been an amazing partner. So that's been in operation for about a little over a week now.
Do they take pets, Greg?
Yes.
Because I came by about 4 o'clock and I saw them all coming with all dogs, shapes and sizes. Yeah. And
we've tried to make these as low barrier as possible, just like last year. So you know, animals are allowed. They do have to be crated unless they're a specific service dog. But and even to the point where people can come in intoxicated, they just can't consume anything on site. So they're very low barrier.
Wow. Do you get assistance from the animal shelter?
No, CVRM pretty much manages it. They've got their own kennels and stuff that they purchased last year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they have
on-site. But if we do, like if we're on a couple instances where we've been working with permanent placement for a couple individuals, then we have utilized the animal shelter. They house them for free. So what we're finding is it's a pretty regular clientele. So it's not like, you know, a group this week and a new one next week. It's kind of the same people over and over, which has somewhat of downfall because we're kind of creating more of an enabling system because they're, you know, going to the well during the day, and then they're vanned over at night into that. So we're trying to work with a lot of those clients, because obviously if they're willing to commit to specific locations, we're trying to get them into, you know, some permanent situations. CVRM has placed about 11 people into their programming or return to family. So we are being able to place them. We've also worked a lot better. CVRM is working in conjunction with Passive Life. We've extended the hours of these to start at 3 p.m. So that's allowing Path of Life outreach workers and county staff to be able to work with the individuals, where it was very difficult, as you know, from a 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. operation.
And when do they shutter? Are they open for the end of September?
September 30th. We are working with the county on possible additional CARES Act extension money to run them through December. That's not final, but for now it's September 30th. I'll put it this way, the first priority on the CARES Act dollars is to extend the Project Room Key, where we've been housing individuals in hotels. Because obviously they're much easier to get into more permanent type situation. But as I said, we're working to see if there's a possibility of extending the cooling centers as well.
I have a question sort of related in the same realm regarding the money that United Way Inland Valleys and Lift to Rise is giving out. At their meeting on Friday, I learned that 35% of those funds were scheduled for Lift to Rise to disseminate. Does that mean that 35% of all of that money is to stay in the Coachella Valley? You
know. Yes, so that was the original allocation, Dr. Borja, we were trying to get a 50-50 split, but you know, population-wise, so it was that 65-35 split. What we'll do though, and as we've seen the applications come in, about 49%, I believe, of total applications, my numbers may be off, but are coming from the Valley. So we are about half of the county. So in this next round, we'll see how the application process goes, and then possibly look at for the third round adjusting that allocation, because obviously if there's a greater need out here and there's more people requesting the assistance, we want to make sure that money is available. And then the Board of Supervisors was given that impression is not the right word, but was given that information when we first passed it, that, you know, even though we're doing a 65-35 split, there may be a need to relook at how that goes.
Thank you for all of that support. I know it's been, it'll just be very helpful to people.
Well, and it's only going to get worse now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Carol. I have a question.
Okay, sure. Carol.
For Greg, I know that the federal relief funds for rental evictions is going to expire, and I'm wondering, is there any discussion about, you know, not having a large number of families out on the streets who've been evicted? Is there a discussion going on about that?
So the federal rules are primarily for mortgage holders, FHA. The actual moratorium on evictions is a state policy that expires at the end of this month. We haven't heard yet, but we are anticipating that the governor will extend that, especially as we've gone under more closure orders. As I think a lot of you are aware, Supervisor Perez did introduce one at the board, and we didn't have the votes for that. But to answer your question, Carol, we're advocating, as far as the county goes, with the governor to do that extension. The financial, you know, help from the federal government really needs to come from the adoption of the HEROES Act passed by the House or another form of stimulus bill. And we're not anticipating any action on that until the end of the month, if then.
I have some information from Lift to Rise about how they've expended their funds, if anybody's interested. They had 3,854 applicants. This is the end of June. 45% was East Valley, 55% West Valley. Family size average was 3.6. 66% of the people who applied were behind on their rent. 49% unemployed due to COVID-19. 45% had children under the age of 5 years old. 93% were worried about their next month's rent, where that might come from. Half who applied were 2 to 3 months behind in their rent. That's what I got from Lift to Rise.
Thank you, Carol. Questions for Greg at this moment? Hearing none, we thank you, Greg, for your help with this situation and your information.
You're welcome.
Having no comments, we'll move on to grant payment schedule. Donna, is that you also? Will you be providing the information or does anyone have questions for Donna on the grant payment schedule information provided?
I had one question. There was an asterisk on the West Valley Homeless Initiative on that report. Do you know what that stands for?
That's our original collective fund that we started way back in 2016, 2017, when we put our first $2 million in. And that's what it was called at the time, the West Valley Homelessness Initiative. So that's that fund that we did the matching dollars with CBAG and the other cities. So that's the one that we've been, and then we updated it with another $1 million a year after that.
Okay, and what is EV funding?
East Valley. That's the one that the board originally approved, $300,000.
Good. I just wanted to know what it's
for.
Thank you.
20 years? Okay.
Does anyone else have questions about the grant payment schedule? Was that a yes?
Sorry, Greg still has his camera on, but with his face behind the mask, it was all you could see was his body and the background. It was just kind of funny. Sorry.
I know, I told him I liked his background picture.
It's cute.
I love it, yeah.
Is this something you downloaded, Greg, or is it you actually have it pinned on the wall? You're mute.
Yeah, just downloaded a picture.
Oh.
And then uploaded it to Zoom.
Oh, cool. Okay, seeing that there are no questions, I'll move on to committee member comments. Are there any committee member comments at this time?
Yeah, this is Nick. No. I just wanted to compliment the staff work and urge you to keep up the good work safely.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Nicholas.
This is Carol. I had a question.
Hey, Carol.
At my last meeting, I think it was Karen who asked for an update on the Avery Trust Fund. And I don't remember getting a report on that.
There was a report at the board meeting.
Oh, well, I'm just saying, is there a report for this month in terms of what's happening with that grant?
No.
I do.
And I have a question about the next next program committee meeting. Are we meeting in August?
Thank you for that, Camarado. I guess I was the only one that put that on there, but we are usually dark in August.
I mean, yeah, usually we don't have any meetings during that month, right?
Right.
Correct.
Unless there's something that's urgent or an emergency that needs to come before the program committee.
I think that if the other members of the program committee agree that if there's nothing urgent, that we move it on to September. And if something urgent comes up, we'll have it for that scheduled date. Is that okay with everybody?
Fine with me.
Yes.
Karen? And Karen?
Yes.
It's fine. Okay.
This is where staff starts to sing "See You in September."
Alrighty.
See you in September.
Well, thank you all for your hard work, and I guess we will see you in September unless something else comes up that's more urgent. And I will be adjourning the meeting at 1:32.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you.